From Middletown to Pittsburgh, Somerset to Smithport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, energy is playing a major role in NATO's response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and Pennsylvania's vast reserves of natural gas could be pivotal in the new energy world order. David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew are here to discuss. And due to an influx of COVID-19 relief funds, Pennsylvania state government has a large budget surplus. I'll have a town hall commentary on why that could be more dangerous for taxpayers than a budget deficit. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first headlines from patownhall.com. With the new congressional district map in place, for now, the past week has seen a number of candidates change their plans. Most notably, Mid-State Congressman Fred Keller, who finds himself gerrymandered into a district with fellow Republican Congressman Glenn G.T. Thompson, announced that he will not seek re-election. The districts were combined because Pennsylvania lost one congressional seat due to reapportionment. Meanwhile, Congressman Scott Perry, who occupies a high-profile post as chairman of the House Freedom Caucus and whose district encompasses the capital city of Harrisburg, found that his two most likely Democratic challengers have decided not to enter the race. Former State Auditor General Eugene DePasquale and George Scott, who ran against Perry in 2018, said they will not run this year, citing the fact the district became more Republican in redistricting. And Guy Shiraki, the former Chester County Chamber president, who dropped out of the Republican gubernatorial race last week, has announced that he will seek election to Congress in a district that includes Chester County and parts of Berks County. All of this as a group of Republican voters have appealed to the federal courts to invalidate the new map, as it was imposed by judicial fiat rather than by the state legislature. That is an apparent violation of the state constitution. And the state Supreme Court further waded into politics this past week, lifting a Commonwealth court order that had put on hold the casting of mail-in ballots. The lower court had ruled that mail-in ballots violate the state constitution. The state Supreme Court is now reviewing that ruling. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania state government is divesting itself of investments with Russian companies and those who do business in Russia. State liquor stores will no longer sell Russian vodka, but the state's biggest role could come in the form of supplying the world's energy needs. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. He is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Always good to be here, David. Thank you.
Outstanding. And Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's foremost free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Excellent to be here, David.
Well, so there are more sobering things, I'm afraid, that we have to give our attention to. We find ourselves gathered here with the world at war, that the Russian dictator Vladimir Putin is besieging the independent nation of Ukraine, and that the consequences, the fallout from all of this, of course, is unknown and unknowable at this hour, but surely it's not good, and that these circumstances require us to get some perspective on how all this came to pass. And in fact, the aggressor nation, Russia, has an economy that runs almost exclusively on the export of extracted resources, primarily oil and coal and natural gas, and that, again, energy security is national security, and that the failure of the U.S. to fully deploy our energy resources for the world to strengthen our economy and to disentangle our allies from problematic relationships, all of that is manifest right now. What a terrible, terrible state of affairs.
And the Russian war machine is run on fossil fuels. As you said, David, natural gas, oil, coal. And through the combination of a ruthless mindset and having access to all the cash that those fossil fuels yield, the Russians have been able to bully an entire neighborhood of the world.
Yep.
And they have done that in a way that has cut off or diminished American influence. As you know, the United States has been a strong force for peace and stability in the world and economic freedom, prosperity for all the world's people for a century at least, mm-hmm. on a worldwide level. But because we failed to infiltrate or get access to the markets for fossil fuels, not because of any foreign actor, but because of our own misguided American policy on energy, we've now empowered Russia to be in a position to become more than just a threat to its neighbor, its neighbors, but an actual immediate force of death and destruction on its neighbors.
And because, Rebecca, the point is Steve makes is an important one. Because the Russian economy depends on the foreign capital that they get from selling those natural resources, those energy resources, our failure to mobilize our energy economy and drive down prices, like we could literally defund the Kremlin just by maximizing our own energy output. Why have we not done that?
That's exactly right. And I like the way Steve put it, that actually that Russia's resources are actually funding his military right now. And that's absolutely the case. And the thing that I had thought as he was saying that is America's leadership and America's resources and energy could be a tool to support our allies and freedom. And we are not using that effectively in that way. And that is a result of policy choices that have been made here in this country over the past couple years. But the result of that is that just specifically with Russia, last year in 2021, we doubled our imports of Russian oil here in the United States. 40% of Europe depends on Russia for 40% of its gas. America could supply all of those resources that are being provided, you know, from outside this country and support our allies and really support freedom. And we have chosen not to do that.
Well, and it's the decisions that have been made by governors like Andrew Cuomo in New York and Phil Murphy in New Jersey that have prevented Pennsylvania from being able to deploy our incredibly prolific natural gas here to – we can't get it to the coast. We can't get – there's a liquefied natural gas depot in Cove Point, Maryland that is fed by Pennsylvania natural gas, but it is comparatively small and that facility is maxed out. For us to get more of our American liquefied natural gas to market, we need new export terminals. The terminals that America has on the eastern seaboard, on the eastern coast, are on the Gulf of Mexico. They're way down in Corpus Christi. And that again, if it weren't for these anti-production, anti-growth, anti-American energy left-wing governors in these neighbor states, we might be able to deploy Pennsylvania resources, which would be good for our allies and, of course, good for us and our economy.
Yeah, and our listeners know that Pennsylvania is the second biggest exporter of natural gas in the country. We're just behind Texas, and we absolutely have the resources that could support development of those relationships and supporting our allies with energy. But and last I checked, there were two pipelines in Pennsylvania that were canceled within the past couple of years, I believe. One was going up to New York.
Yes, the Constitution pipeline.
Right. So two pipelines that under heavy pressure from environmental groups were stopped. And we now do not have the resources to move Pennsylvania natural gas out of the state.
Pennsylvania itself has reserves of natural gas capable of providing a century, 100 years of peace and prosperity, not just for Pennsylvanians, not just for Americans, but for much of the world. And because of, again, the misguided domestic policies, the environmental extremists, those who refuse to accept the idea that it's good to replace one energy source with another that is cheaper and cleaner and less environmentally damaging.
Yes.
And instead of that, they say no fossil fuels. We have to make ourselves weak and vulnerable to foreign nations like Russia instead.
Yeah. And at the same time that other powers like China continue to build up coal-fired generation capacity that is not nearly so clean as it would be in the U.S. And in fact, I read where Russian extracted natural gas is 4 to 5 times more carbon intensive than natural gas harvested in the U.S. because we have environmental standards and they don't.
And we like to have environmental standards in the United States.
Exactly.
That's something we all agree on. Having good safety requirements and protecting the environment is something we believe in. Unfortunately, that is not part of the culture in China or in Russia.
What should we be doing in terms of if Harrisburg had a pro-production consensus on Pennsylvania energy, what would we be doing?
Well, let me mention, as Steve was talking here, I was thinking that we have increased our energy production in Pennsylvania, but we have decreased carbon emissions. So not only have is Pennsylvania and American energy much cleaner than that's produced in Russia and elsewhere in the world, but we have actually decreased our carbon emissions. It is cleaner energy that we're able to produce from our natural gas here. And Russia actually is under the Paris Accord, able to increase its carbon emissions 34% over the next decade. So we know that for the foreseeable future, our energy is going to be much cleaner. So what we need to do, like you said, is really encourage our domestic energy production. We need to encourage that through regulation. We do have clean production of energy here because of environmental regulation, but it can't be overregulated to the point that it isn't productive anymore or isn't able to be produced, which is exactly what we're talking about with the pipeline projects. The pressure that was put on those proposed projects from the regulatory agencies was immense, such that it became it couldn't be supported anymore. It wouldn't have been a profitable enterprise for the companies to actually produce them. And in fact, there was a lawsuit in New Jersey that went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court, PMA, was actually a party to that the New Jersey Business and Industry Association and Pennsylvania manufacturers had a joint friend of the court brief showing the argument why why domestic energy is necessary, and that the thing that's grating is that the Murphy administration in New Jersey, that they were taking on a completely specious technical argument that they themselves didn't even believe in. It was just a delaying tactic, saying that it's not even worth getting into. But it was completely picayune, and the U.S. Supreme Court agreed with us. But the problem is that because the project was going to continue to face persecution on the other side of the Delaware, that the investors, including UGI, have put the project on ice. So this actually brings me to a point here, and I just want to identify, you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. But because of the radical environmentalists and their grip in New York and New Jersey and other places, it's going to be up to us to deploy this energy here at home. And one of the things that we could do, should do, must do, is to build an LNG export terminal on the Delaware River, whether that's Lower Bucks, Philadelphia, Delaware County. We can put an LNG export terminal on the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and then pipe in natural gas from the Marcellus play from the far northeast, and then we can take matters into our own hands without any approval from federal regulators or interference by neighboring states.
And this needs to be a priority, not just for Pennsylvania, but for national security. And I think that has become clear at this point from this crisis in Russia, is we cannot depend on foreign resources, and we need to support our allies with our energy resources. This is a national security issue. This is important to our allies in the world, too.
Because ultimately, You know, industrial strength undergirds military strength undergirds national security, and that Putin has actually deployed nuclear reactors, a massive fleet of nuclear reactors, to power Russia itself so that Russia has more of these energy inputs that it can sell globally for more money for its war machine and its various exploits.
And this is not some academic theoretical discussion. This is lives and death hanging in the balance even today as we speak. So we don't have time. There's a sense of urgency here. People today in the Ukraine are having their homes destroyed, their loved ones injured and killed because the United States has been slow to get on the ball and realizing that as the leader of the free world, we have to lead with energy.
And we have the tools. I mean, this is what's so frustrating is that – and also our allies in Europe, like in Great Britain, they have shale resources that could be accessed through the American technology of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. And the Greens there have shut things down. We as Americans need to maximize domestic energy production for our own strength, for the well-being of our own economy and our people, and to empower America on the world stage. We need to break the spell, this green delusion. This needs to be the end of it because, again, you look at the position that the Germans have put themselves in where they're more than 40% dependent on natural gas from Russia. If Gazprom turns off the spigot, that the Germans will freeze in the dark. That is not a good position to allow your country to fall into. Energy security is national security. And if I could pivot on that point, the only way that you get energy security is with domestic energy production, which is why for all the people who want to make us dependent on solar panels and wind turbines, that those to manufacture those, you have to have critical minerals that are not mined adequately in the U.S. and absolutely are not processed in the U.S. So that's a different kind of dependence. It's a choke point because all of those minerals are refined in China. Even if we mined those critical minerals here at home, which we don't do enough of, we'd have to send them to China for processing and buy them back. Like, we need to maximize our indigenous American natural resources, coal and natural gas and petroleum, and deploy those to power our economy and to, again, to lead the world as an energy superpower.
And we've talked a lot today about our nation's role in the world in maintaining safety and security and prosperity around the world through the adequate use of our resources. But we often forget about the fact that there is another piece to this. The scarcity, the artificial scarcity created by government overregulation,
yes,
unnecessary regulation of the energy industry, is creating a situation in which inflation will take hold. When supply is artificially constrained of any commodity, any product that people want and need, it will drive the price up. Now we're seeing that the detrimental effects of that domestically. Our inflation rate is rising to the highest it's been in 40 years, and it seems to be on the upswing. Supply chains are disrupted because of the turmoil around the world created in part by the Russian aggression. And now we're seeing the price right here at home, yeah, literally in the price of the goods and services we buy.
Well, and certainly, Rebecca, you know, in your industry with trucking, you see that effect directly that, you know, as prices at the pump go up, it makes every mile, mm-hmm, of transportation more expensive, and that yeah, insofar as absolutely everything that everybody buys is delivered on a truck, that all the raw materials or component parts to the factory, you know, arrive via truck, that all of those trips, all those steps in the process, when they become more expensive, yeah, it all adds up to higher prices.
That's right. Every level of the supply chain that's transported, whether that be by truck or plane or railroad for that matter, all have to use energy. So when energy is inflated, the price goes up at every level of the process. And this brings up a point that we haven't talked about yet, and that is some of the policy decisions that have been made at the national level. I mean, we didn't even mention the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline, which happened on the first day of President Biden's administration, and the impact that has had on oil and the price of gas.
Well, yeah, because he also yanked the permits for drilling in Alaska.
Yes.
Pulled permits to explore in the Gulf of Mexico and banned all harvesting of energy on federal lands.
On federal lands, that's right. Those decisions have real impacts in the real world. And we will see energy prices, gas prices in particular, much higher as a result of those policy decisions. So that's what we're trying to say here, I think, is that these policy decisions that are being made every day at the state and at the federal level are having very real impacts here in the U.S. on our gas pumps on international relations.
Absolutely.
And on the people of Ukraine at this point.
So, I mean, to the extent that there's good news, the silver lining is this, that because our problems have been driven largely by the foolishness that we've done to ourselves, it means that it is within our power to set things straight. And as Pennsylvanians come up on a series of very consequential elections this year, primary elections in May to choose the major party nominees, the elections in November to choose our future office holders, a pro-production agenda for energy needs to be at the top of the list of people's priorities. So anyway, that's all the time we have for this show. But Steve, tell the listeners where they can go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing.
Folks can please visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Rebecca, where can people find you?
The Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association is at pmta.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Lawmakers in Harrisburg are finding themselves in an unusual situation. There is a surplus of funds as the Commonwealth prepares for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. Budget surpluses are rare and more dangerous than budget deficits because they generally lead to spending that cannot be maintained over the following years without raising taxes. Pennsylvania has fallen into that trap before. In an effort to spur recovery from the Great Recession, the Obama administration successfully lobbied Congress to pass the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Trillions of dollars flowed into state coffers, and then Governor Ed Rendell directed additional billions into public education. But, as planned, the funding stopped. By then, Republican Governor Tom Corbett had succeeded Rendell in office. He raised the state's share of spending on public education, but the stimulus dollars were gone, creating fertile ground for the left to claim that Corbett had cut education spending. The big lie stuck and contributed to Corbett's loss in the next election. This time around, Republicans are wise to the trick. The state is once again flush with stimulus cash shoveled into state coffers by the federal government on the mistaken assumption that tax revenue would plummet in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. For many states, including Pennsylvania, tax revenue has actually increased, creating the current funding surplus. The left is behaving like kids in a candy store, proposing all manner of ways in which to spend that money, including, once again, a massive increase in funding for government schools. Republicans, however, understanding the fiscal bulge is transitory, are urging restraint and caution. Governor Tom Wolf, in his budget address, not only took credit for the surplus he did not create, but predictably called for spending an additional $1.9 billion on pre-K through college education. This in addition to the billions already pumped into the public education dark hole from the many COVID-19-related stimulus programs created by Congress. All of this raises the question, does more money equate to better educational performance? The left views even asking the question as heretical. But despite the billions poured into public education in recent years, there is no discernible improvement in student outcomes. Democratic leaders were quick to quash a recent state agency report that in fact found there is no correlation between higher spending and student achievement. In addition to creating state budget surpluses, the COVID-19 pandemic also created a surplus of students seeking state aid to attend non-government schools. In addition to being whipsawed by public school closures, mask mandates, and other pandemic-related problems, parents found themselves at home, helping students with course material, and in many cases did not like what they saw. That has led to a new wave of parental activism and also spiked demand for education alternatives. The Commonwealth Foundation reports that programs like the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, EITC, and the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit, OSTC, which give businesses and individuals tax credits for donating to scholarship organizations, topped out before fulfilling scholarship need. Quote, limits on the program in state law have resulted in more applications denied than scholarships awarded in some years, the Commonwealth Foundation reported, with applications for both the tax credits and scholarships exceeding the funding available. The report continued, quote, EITC and OSTC programs awarded 61,767 scholarships in 2019, while 75,651 applications were denied because of enrollment caps. And that was before the pandemic-related increase in demand. To correct the problem, State Senator Mike Regan of York and Cumberland counties has proposed adding a budget escalator that would increase state funding caps for EITC and OSTC by 25% every year when at least 90% of the available tax credits are claimed the previous year. That would eventually allow for enough tax credit to fund scholarship demand. That measured approach to creating more educational opportunities for students and parents is a sustainable, fiscally prudent policy that breaks the cycle of pumping more and more money into a government school system that produces no discernible improvement in performance as a result of the additional dollars spent. Tom Wolf has just a few months left in office. This time, the legislature must sidestep the funding trap Ed Rendell set for his successor and instead use the surplus on short-term proven programs and maybe save some for a rainy day. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a few weeks away. The premier annual grassroots conservative event will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. Former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin will be the kickoff speaker. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and for U.S. Senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.